Good morning. Welcome to the FTS Bet Slip on Tuesday, the 7th of June. I hope you're all well. This is, I think it's episode 998, two away from the 1,000. I'll get to that in a minute. And if you stay on the end of this post, there is another mindset bit as we move into money management, and we'll be doing certainly three, maybe four episodes on that. My key with these, as I've said, is to try and keep them to sort of half hours. I do lose it a little bit in this one. I'm trying to do them without swearing, but just certain things have come to light over the last year, really, that have niggled me in on this topic. They come out. Again, it all sort of boils down. Again, I talk about social media. This ability to poke your nose into other people's business, comment on other people, slag other people off behind their back. I've been aware of a bit of it over a long period of time, which is just getting to me a little bit. I cover a little bit of that in today's one when we actually get to finance. As I've sort of said, particularly the gamble, I think what people don't realise is the gambling world is very, very small. That whilst it seems big, if you only need to look at things like Twitter, all the same people follow all the same people, and they form this sort of community. And unfortunately, there's a lot of tossers in it. But there you go. But on social media, I did that social media. I talked about it on Saturday, was it? When I went off on one, I'm useless. I can't remember what I was talking about. But Betty Blogger posted a tweet, then a link to Kevin Bridges talking about social media. And I hadn't seen it before. I like Kevin Bridges, very funny guy. Watched that, thought brilliant, thought it really was funny. But he talked about how dating, and now it's a, like a swipe and a like, and that's how shallow the world has become. I think it's really tragic. I really do think it's tragic, as opposed to going through, you know, what I went through as a kid, which was dating. And at school I didn't bother dating. I was absolutely useless, more interested in sport. You know, I was a massive Spurs fan. I was going to Spurs. I mean, when I was 15, 16, I went to every game, Spurs home and away. It just sort of couldn't wait for Friday to go and see Spurs. And I played golf. I was as I've said before, I was a good golfer. I was scratched by 17 plus two when I was 17 and a half. It kind of consumed my life. So I didn't really go down the road that a lot of my mates were going around of pursuing women. I mean, I had the looks. It was always going to be nailed on when it going forward anyway. So it wasn't a problem. But my guy who was best man at my wedding, the first time I ever went abroad was with him. His family used to always go on holiday abroad. I used to always be envious of it because we didn't. But they always always took a mate for him to play with. And a couple of my mates had been with him, 12, 13, 14. And then when we were 15, me and him had become good mates. And they invited me, and we were going to go and stay in, funnily enough, we were going to Malta. They were holidaying in Malta, invited me. I genuinely didn't think my parents would say, yes, you can go, but they did. I genuinely can't remember what the financial arrangements were, whether my mum and dad had to pay for it. Honestly, I have no idea. But we were due to, all I do remember is we were due to stay in one hotel, and at the last minute we got moved to the Holiday Inn. So we stayed in the Holiday Inn, I think somewhere like St. Julian's. I'm going back 36 years, so apologies if I forget this. But me and him were Jack the Lad. I remember buying a Juventus. I may have told this story. I don't know. I have a Juventus Ariston top. That was my cool kit. I had a Juventus top with Ariston on it. But we went out. You know, we got some. When we got there, we went and bought some beer. I think it was called Chisk. And went to the hotel. You know, amazing. Had a room for ice. You're like, wow. And we filled the bath up and put this Chisk in the bath. Of ice, thought we were right cool. We were the cool kids, the cool art kids. Ridiculous. Hopleaf and Chisk, I think the two beers were called. And then when the next day, we did that on day one, the next day the cleaners had emptied it, taken it out and left us a note. But we We did all the usual stuff around by the pool, you know, this, that and the other. But then there was a nightclub. It was either on the site or just round the corner. And me and him went down to this bar. And I've always looked old for my age, so we walked in and we did get served, but the place was absolutely dead. It was like a disco that hadn't got going yet. You know, it was sort of early evening, 10, 11 o'clock, the place was going to be heaving, but we were in there at about 7 o'clock. So there's me and him sat at a table. The DJ is playing some music, and there's a girl sat at a table talking to the DJ. My mate, this is gospel truth. Absolutely fucking ridiculous. Kev, you'll be listening. He'll be listening to this, laughing. If he's had a bad time, but hopefully he's listening to this. We ordered drinks at the bar, and it was some sort of, you know, slick barman, Italian Spanish lad, very slick, you know, shirt half open, a bit sort of Tom Jones style, bit of medallion and greased back hair, and he got us a beer, and my mate Kev, and it was him, not me, thought it was a good idea. It must have been two girls, I think there might have, must have been, we wouldn't have done this for one girl, it must have been two girls, and he sent a note from the barman to the two girls, to this table, would you like a drink? And it came back, we're 15 years old, we got fuck all money, and it came back that they ordered two drinks, whatever they were. I've absolutely no idea what they were. They weren't beers, I remember that, but they were just, you know, whatever, gin and tonics, whatever. So we sent these drinks over, and that was it, and we just sat drinking. They sat at that table drinking and carried on. About half hour later, let's get another drink, he gets a napkin again, writes on it. It was two, definitely. It's all coming back to me. It's all coming back. It's coming back to me now. He wrote on the note, how about you two buy us a drink now? And sent the barman over with that. I mean, this is ridiculous. This is actually what he was like. I used to tell people he was an airline pilot called Alex. At 15, 16. Fucking ridiculous. But he he sent this note with the barman back there, and we're like all excited now, right, we're getting in here, and so he's gone off on the note department, they've written something down, comes back, why don't you two fuck off? And that is, on my kid's life, that is true. I reckon these girls were 18, 19, 20, and we were a couple of fucking scroats. But yeah, that's gospel truth, why don't you two fuck off? But just watching that Betty Blogger, it just brought that memory back to me, that the dating thing, it just wasn't something I really did. I met Sam in a, you know, I'd like to go out for a drink when I was 18, 19, 20, did uni, and when my sort of old man went to prison and life started falling apart, I got into going to the pub and having beer and the things you do. But there was one girl at school that I really liked, you know, you sort of silently like one. Funnily enough, I bumped into her when I was about 30 in a car park. Yeah, I just didn't really do the dating thing. I met Sam. You know, Sam spoke to me. It was sort of all, even that, it wasn't planned. I was just in a bar and she came up and spoke to me. And the rest is history. Here we are 25 years on. And talking to Sam, absolute disaster. I should now be at the airport. I should now be at the airport. 2 o'clock this morning, get a text, her flight's cancelled. This fucking travel bollocks. So that shafted my week completely, because I actually had a week planned of things to do. And I'm trying to focus now on getting her home. But yeah, absolute fucking useless. And whilst the world fills itself with all these nonsense issues, we have a fucking government that can't do fuck all. And I know this is blamed on lots of factors, and airline businesses getting rid of people, but we need to get a grip on it. I mean, certainly need to get a grip on how it's communicated and how customers are dealt with. Ed, you asked me, you obviously had the vote yesterday in old fuckpot. Ed, you asked me on Twitter, and I don't enter into this shit on Twitter. Twitters for people like Statsbet to tell me to watch Love Island, and I can tell them to fuck off. Fucking Love Island. What is the matter with you? I'm trying. That is my campaign in life. My campaign in life is just to get you all watching less shit. But he put, would I, thoughts please, would I rather BJ, BJ, I don't know, I'm assuming you mean Boris, yeah, would I rather Boris, incompetent liar, or what we know is waiting in the wings, which is more aggressively opposed to society's most vulnerable, would have less aid for cost of living crisis, more anti-immigration, but would be competent in executing, which is the less of the evils, incompetence, but slightly more compassionate, or competent, but aggressively uncompassionate, cronyism with state aid, or hard as fuck austerity and super racist. I'm not going to sit here now after saying since 2019 that Boris Johnson should stay. It's as simple as that. I don't think the guy is fit for the office he's held. The first thing I believe in is honour, integrity in what we're doing. I accept that politicians tell lies. I accept that they, you know, when they're out campaigning, a lot of what we get told is a lot of bollocks. We are talking about a bloke who's ripping the rule book up completely with absolute disdain for everything and every institution for himself. If he goes, I'm not saying that. Clearly they haven't got a competent leader because they can't find one to replace him, and that's half the issue. But somebody will do the job. That's a fact. Somebody will step up and do the job, and then we can get back to sorting out are what they doing what we want in Britain. It's you know, Labour supporters should be, I guess, jumping up and down thinking, well, you know, we've got more chance of beating this. I mean, he's a circus clown. That's what he is. He is a lying circus clown. That's what we're dealing with. And Labour should be. I mean, it's absolutely staggering to see that they haven't demolished them. It is staggering. You know, Starmer, but I just think I've said it many times, I just think we've all got to come together, get this lot out, and start again. You cannot have what is going on with people like Rees-Mogg, Raab, Gove, Johnson, Patel, just coming out day to day, looking after themselves and fucking lying permanently. Now, it's normalising it. Where we used to be able to go, fucking hell, hang on a minute, that's bullshit. It is just normalising it. Every time they open their fucking mouths, it is lies. It's not state aid for the 800 quid and the 400. The only reason they did that was because it was the day after the Sue Gray report. You can dress it up how you want. That is the only reason. They weren't going to do it. They fucking voted against it literally 2 months before. They have done U-turn after U-turn to save this one fucking guy. It is unbelievable. And I just do not get the support for him. I think he is odious. I think he's horrendous. I think get the fuck out of it. And then we'll deal with what's ahead of us then. That's my only view. If we then got in a fucking nasty government, we deal with them. We deal with them on policy. We deal with them there. They might turn out to be better than we think. And then we can try and get back to normality and get two functioning parties. I am not one who buys into that's my team and I'll support them forevermore. I'm no Labour fan. I'm no Conservative fan. I like to see what's going on in front of me and make my decisions based on that. Unfortunately, not enough people do that. It's I'm fucking Labour and that's it. I will not give my support to a Conservative government under this fucking bloke as long as I live. I've told my MP that. I think none of them, well, now 148 of them have got some sort of backbone. None of them have got a backbone. What he is doing, how he is behaving, how he has always behaved is fucking disgusting. He's never been any different. I've said this all along. I'm not going to change now. He's fucking vermin. He is repulsive. Get the fuck out of it and we'll go from there. Simple as that. And all this, oh, there's a war on, we can't, it's bollocks. The exact reason we should get rid of him is because of all this shit that's going on, and get people in who are competent to fucking deal with it and manage it, and then we'll decide them on their performance against that. Not a guy who just blah, 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 blusters his way through talking shit day in, day out. It's fucking repulsive what we're watching. I wasn't intending to get that. Right, that's that. What else have we got? Love Island, load of old crap. Ed, you've got me on one. See, now the minute I start thinking of him, I fucking rev right up. I see Mickelson signed up to the LIV. I'm told it's 54. That's how we would call it. The Saudi 54. Are they only playing 54 holes? I honestly don't know. I haven't looked into it that much. You know, it's money talks, isn't it? I mean, that's like was like the worst kept secret in golf, that Mickelson turning out. Be really interesting to see after this first event this week what happens. But as I say, it's you know, it's gone on since day one. Qatar, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, they've all played there. You know, we can't start trying to now it suits us get morally involved. It's just going to be interesting to see what happens. My view will be that it won't go away and it will take over. Simple as that. I'm as I said last week, I'm waiting, really. I guess they won't do anything till balls have been hit, that the PGA Tour, and we'll see what they actually do to people. You know, you just look at people like Poulter, great in the Ryder Cup, probably a future Ryder Cup captain, and not going to do that now. And it all seems money based, which I just think things like that are a little bit sad. I'd friend, you know, talk about money. It is a vulgar subject, I get that. But I'd have, you know, and people say, it's all right, you've got loads. I get that if you've got money, life is a bit better. But there's a limit to what you need. I had a friend of mine who I said, we were doing a goals thing. And he came back and his goals were 50 million. To build business worth 50 million. And I said to him, why? Why? And he revised it back down to 5 million. But why do you want 50 million? What can you do with it? Genuinely. You can't fucking spend it all, and you're going to pop your clogs and leave it to somebody else. So I think the bit we all miss on that, we all fucking die. It's not like it's going to go on forevermore. I just do not get why people need this need for tens and hundreds of millions and this money hoarding. It's just sick to me. It's just ridiculous. Yes, you need a level of money to live a decent life. I fully get that. But no one fucking walking this earth needs 100 million, 200 million, 300 million. It's just fucking ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. In my opinion, I just find it mad. Anyway, right. Right, 1,000th episode. I've thought hard about this. Long and hard about it, to be fair. And I think it's really important to me that, and I have given money away over the course of this podcast to people I don't even know, which is fine, you know, they were the things, but I think when I get to 1,000 podcasts in, there are people who've listened to them all, there's people who use FTS, there's people who listen to them to slag me off, whatever it may be. It's really important to me that I'm going to try and take the person who wins on a bit of a journey, but it will all be related to FTS. So I do want somebody, in effect, who one, listens for the right reasons, and two, has used and supports FTS as a whole. So when I do the podcast on probably Saturday, it all depends now with what happens with She Who Must Be Obeyed getting home. I'm going to do the golf tomorrow. She's not coming home tomorrow. I can't get her a flight tomorrow. It looks like Thursday, Friday. So I'm gonna ask for something. Ashamedly unabashed about this. I make no apologies for it. I'm going to give somebody £1,000 to trade, or I will trade it with them for them. I'm going to show them a method I use. And for the 1,000th episode, but to qualify, they are going to have to do something for FTS on the basis of a testimonial, and there'll be two formats which I'll release on Saturday, or when I do that podcast, and those who do that will be the ones who are eligible to win it, and those who don't won't. I'm not just going to have an answer a question and draw you out. We are trying to move FTS to being lessee and reliant, and in effect running on its own steam, with me working then on the trading and the data side and helping people use that and not getting bogged down in the, with the greatest respect, just the basic questions and the queries that come in. So we're, you know, with Dave's help, really trying to sort of separate me out from it, so that, yes, it's at the minute it's me for everything, and in effect move that to one side, have it as a as a website over there that I focus on helping people learn how to trade, how to use the data. I build the data, so I'll say, right, this is what we want to put out and this is how we use it. So it'll be based on how I operate. But that's where we're trying to get to. Now, obviously, once I start to separate myself out from that, I'm not talking to people as much on that side of it, or join FTS and this, that and the other. So we're going to try and get you guys to contribute to do that for us. That then runs. I can then focus on the training and helping people make the absolute most of what the website does offer. And there's many benefits to how we're doing that. And I'm for me, it's a time thing. Certainly, I'm getting much more time to help with people, help people and move the trading side on. And then I don't have to worry, as I say, you know, people get all their queries answered quicker. So there's loads of benefits to it. But I'm going to give away of my own money, £1,000 and 1,000th podcast. But you're going to have to work for it a little bit and I will probably do that on Saturday. So if you're interested in that, you're going to get £1,000 to trade. You're going to get a method to trade, which one of my strong points has been taking sums like £500 and £1,000 and turning them into five figures over sort of 2, 3, 4, 5 years. That kind of is my modus operandi. So if that's interests you, you'll have to work for it, but it will then ultimately be going to somebody that we know is, I don't want to use the word loyal, it does sound like Bojo, loyal to FTS, but somebody who basically appreciates what we do and will make use of it, rather than just picking a bloke at random and saying, hey, I might have a grand. I just don't think that's what I want to do. So there you go. So it'll be £1,000 for the 1,000th episode. And that £1,000 could become genuinely anything. And that will move us on nicely, nice little caveat, into today's mindset one. So if you stay on the line, I will update, I will be straight into a mindset podcast where we're talking about, we're going to move the topic onto money management. In this episode of this, I want to move into the next few episodes talking about money management plans, risk management, attitude to risk. So let's get straight into it. Let's start straight out the gate. Most people who gamble, trade, lose. Simple as that. You know, it's absolutely proven. You know, I used to say 99%. Now they say with exchange it might be sort of 90% losers, 10% winners, probably somewhere around that, I would think. The bottom line is the people who do it full time, and again, I'm not another one for professional trade. I've not passed any qualifications. You know, it's not like becoming a lawyer or a doctor. But people who tend to do it full time, they tend to be more disciplined than the average gambler. They understand and know the probabilities of outcome. They don't bet for excitement. You know, they tend to bet smart. They make what they deem positive EV bets. They know that losing is part of being successful. So all these sort of things come in. And I just want to go back to one of my first sort of forays into being successful at gambling was playing poker. When we had the poker buzz in the sort of early 2000s, I don't know whether it was late 90s, certainly early 2000s, might have been late 90s, early 2000s, and it was everywhere, poker. I played a lot, but when I played in London, for example, I used to go up to the Vic in London, I used to go to one in Reigate. I didn't sit going for big wins. I just went for steady, consistent results. I wanted to like bed in for you know. I used to start in the Vic in London. I used to start at sort of 10 in the morning and 10 at night and finish at 6 in the morning. I used to want to sit there for 6, 8, 10 hours and just not go for big wins, but just steady, consistent results. I used to go to Vegas a lot, and I think I've told the story, but I'll repeat it, of when I met a guy in Vegas, really, really nice guy. And I used to go out there and play poker, and he showed up every day. Every day he turned up to play poker. And I used to put some hours in myself. And I saw this guy every day, and you just used to watch the players that you wanted to play against and who you wanted to avoid. And this guy just played really tight, probably the tightest player I've ever seen played. Only ever saw him turn over aces, kings, queens, ace, king. And one day I ended up sat next to him. He came and sat, I was already playing, he came and sat in the seat next to me, got chatting to him, and I raised it with him. I said, you only seem to turn over absolute top ends. You know, how do you get away with it? Because obviously once you get a, once I'm watching something like that and he's got a reputation for it, I don't want to be involved with him. I know he's got a good hand. So he said he didn't need to play any other way. He said, I'm here to make money. And for him, the churn of people through Vegas, particularly on the low limit tables, he didn't need to go and play bigger limits where the players were better. But the churn of people through the low limit tables, he knew that people just came to gamble, sit down with $200, $300, and just to have a go and just to have a gamble. And they wanted to be involved in hands. And he just sat day in, day out, picking them off with good cards. He said to me he needed to pay his wife $1,200 a month to cover the rent and shopping and expenses. And I said, look, you know, do you do it? He said, oh, yeah, I do it comfortably. He said he averaged something like, from memory, I think he said something like he didn't make less than $5,000 a month. But he just did the same thing day in, day out. And I'll be honest, speaking to him, I was a bit sort of a bluffing bully at the time. I used to look and target the same people, but I used to try and bully them. You know, like this guy sat down and he doesn't really want to be losing $200. So put him under pressure. So when he bet $50, it was like quarter of his stack. I'd raise it to 150. Now he's got to put three quarters of his stack in. And he'd fold and he'd done the 50. But he still had 150 to keep going. So I was a bit more like that, wasn't I? You know, people who were betting bully, betting people who were betting scared. Hey, Chris Jones, he'll tell you that. But listening to him, I sort of changed a little bit of how I played. I started moving around the poker rooms and playing a bit tighter. And I do truly believe if you have any idea about how to play poker, and I've spoken to a couple of people on FTS who play poker, if you've got any idea and you have patience, you cannot fail to make a living in Vegas at poker. You know, even to this day, the poker rooms are still busy. Same thing happens day in, day out. And it doesn't mean that you will win everywhere. So when I played in London, it was a lot different. Had to play a completely different game. Because Vegas is unique for that player churn and pissed up clueless idiots, where when I played in London, you tended to play with the same faces and you got to know how they played, and it became a bit more of a game of probably, you know, proper skillful poker. But the pissed up lunatics and that in Vegas, you could just go. And I've been 63 times now to Vegas mad when I think about it. And in my heyday, particularly at the end of a football season, you know, I'd fly out for 2 weeks, play poker 14, 18 hours a day. I once played Sunday to Wednesday without a break. And I flew out there with a mate of mine. And when he came over to me on the Wednesday, and his exact words were, don't you think you should go and have a shower? And I'd won, I can't remember, something like $1,200, $1,500 over that session. And when I got back up to the room, I barely had any of it left. I was so tired, exhausted, I just was dropping it on the casino floor behind me. And people were just following me around picking it up. But I'd then fly home, wash my clothes and go straight back. It was genuinely what I saw at the time, money printing. It was no way to live your life. I mean, I used to sit and drink Bud Light pretty much full time, go and leave the table, and we'd either get Asian food delivered. There was like a noodle shop, you could get it brought to the table, or go and grab a McDonald's. You know, not sleep properly. So it was no, you know, everything has its downside. But it was money printing, but it just required discipline and money management. And that is one of the key areas that translates into sports trading. You don't need, you know, if you take poker, you don't need to be in every hand. Just like you don't need to be in every horse race or every football match. You know, good poker players aren't in every hand. You bet more on better hands. You know, you should bet more when you've got more edge in sports. You're always aware of your bet size, what you're putting in. And you should always be aware of that in trading. And you accept bad beats. You know, you can get your cards in with the best of it, and somebody hits a miracle river, they've only got one out. It is going to happen, and you accept that. Of course, you're not happy at the time, but it's the same as a last-minute penalty miss or a goal at the death or a VAR ruling out. Everything happens. And as Kenny says, you got to know when to hold them and when to fold them, and that's much the same in sports trading. You know, a lot of the same mental principles of money management and when to take a red and just move on. And one of the key processes for that is, for money management, is to overcome our sort of hardwired, and I do firmly believe we are hardwired with it, thought processes for short-term reward, and a phrase I've used in my podcast many times, recency bias. We're hearing the phrase more because it is getting, related to a lot more to politics and other walks of life. For example, I've seen in the last couple of months people claiming Klopp versus Guardiola is the best rivalry we've seen in football. Well, of course it's not. It's not. What about Paisley versus Clough in the late 70s, early 80s? Wenger versus Ferguson in the 90s through the 2000s? Tiger Woods is the best golfer we've ever seen. Well, what about Jack Nicklaus, who won 18 majors, finished in the top three in over 30% of the majors he played across 40 years, beat Tiger Woods at Augusta, age 58. When he finished sixth. We tend to make decisions based on what has just happened to us or what we have just seen, and it is a skill and ability to be able to remove that, and I believe you can learn this, and if you do learn it, it is a major hurdle removed in your quest for betting, trading, success. Recency bias for me, it is something I thought, it is one of my pet hates. The world is resorting to it more and more to justify all walks of life. And as a better trader, if you have an ability to remove that, it will help enormously in all areas. And I think it'll help you, if you learn to remove it, it'll take a better view of many of life's other aspects as well. One of the things I'm often asked is, why don't I put up more of my bets trades? And recency bias tends to be, that's what I would put as an encompassing sort of topic as to why I don't. What do I gain? I've mentioned my 80-minute goal. So I bet goals on 80 minutes onwards as an example. What do I gain from posting them genuinely? If I win for a bit, people think fantastic. They might miss three winners and then they bet a loser. Whatever happens, the inevitable losing run will come. And I'm only ever going to be as good as my last bet. I'm not like these Twitter tipsters who just keep churning it out and ignore what's going on. And I don't want to use the phrase high profile. I guess because I've put myself out there with things like this, whatever it is, 5,000 people on Twitter, got a website that's been going 15 years. I get sent pretty much every day of my life, some form of derogatory means of communication. And the latest thing, the thing that has sort of appeared over the last, the newest phenomenon, I guess, is over the last sort of 6 to 12 months, is copies of people's WhatsApp messages. So people have gone off and formed their little WhatsApp groups. And some of you listening to this now, and then in there, because you can't help yourselves, there's messages absolutely slating me. And I'll go back to what I said, that gambling is a small community. And then I get sent, I think you should see this, mate, what they're saying about you. And some, of course, are then people who I think over time have purported to be mates. They're the true snakes, the real snakes. And there's others that I don't even know and I have nothing to do with. And I find, what are you talking about, mate? But for me, they all go in the same file. When push comes to shove, do absolutely nothing for this guy. You just keep... I am, by my own admission, I am one of the best friends anybody could ever have, genuinely. But I am also one of the worst enemies that anybody can ever have. I have got an absolute ruthless, nasty streak in me. I'm well aware of it. I keep it bubbling under me quite often. But I can be one, if I need to be, one nasty little fucker. And I don't like that side of me, but I have to have it, and perhaps it's helped me succeed in life because I can be ruthless when I need to be. But nearly all of these messages are based on recency bias. Getting back to the topic, recency bias from people who don't know me, think they know me through a podcast, or have absolutely no idea who I am. And the one defining factor of all of them is they form this opinion based on recency bias, or they've got this bilge just to spurt out that they feel they've got to tell their new mates in WhatsApp. But none of them have a clue how I operate, what I do, and never will. And go back to the beginning of all this, all that matters for you guys is what you're doing for yourself and the people you want to do it for, family, close friends. You know, I could go on for hours about social media, and I have done before. It achieves one thing for me. It allows arseholes to always be arseholes. And if you cut that side out of it, I don't need to be a member of any WhatsApp groups. I'm in some. My contribution to them is next to zero. But I'm in, you know, in some with people I want to be with, but this, I've got to be in a group, and I want to be in with those guys. I want to be in, it's like going back at school, I want to be in with the cool gang, and let's talk about those people. I find you all a little bit pathetic, I'll be honest. That's where, but we're getting on to another topic. All I will say is don't think I don't know, because I do. When we get down to the nitty gritty of what makes a winner, it will be, without doubt, money management and people's attitude to winning, losing money, and how it affects their overall mindset. Most people don't give up because their system had five losses in a row. They don't say, oh, I've had five losses in a row. They give up because of the money lost from those losers, and they're scared of losing any more money. We've spent three episodes talking about system development, three, four episodes talking about system development, and it is really important. But people can have the best system you can see and still end up losing money because they do not know how to manage that money. Most typical example is winning a bit, raising your stakes disproportionately, and then you hit a losing streak when you've raised those stakes and end up worse off than when you started. The system still works, but you have given up, bottled out, whatever it may be, because the financial pressure is too much. I personally can take mediocre systems, and I've done this with people. I don't need P-tests, T-tests or anything else. I can take a mediocre system and make any halfway decent trading strategy work with solid money management, no recency bias, look at a long-term focus. And as I've said previously, simple systems, you know, ones that people sometimes dismiss as they're too simple to beat the efficient market, which we've talked about, can be highly effective with the right money management. And I always, when I work closely, I get them to write down now how much have you lost, having bets you should not have had, or be giving up when the going got tough because you're sweating on finances. All this is down to money management. You know, I have had emails off what people would deem in this world some of the so-called best traders out there. I hear people say, oh, you're a great trader, mate, blah, blah, blah. I've had emails off some of these people all along the same lines. I'll keep every email all along the same lines. This has hit a sticky patch. I'm X pounds, euros down. What would you do, Ian? It is always the focus on X pounds down, always. Whereas the people starting out who email me are more interested in, I've built this system, what do you think of the system? No talk about money or this system. Everyone wants to know, what's this system like? When I first won a load of money, as a flashy 30, I'm going to give you a little analogy that JG gave to me, and he was my mentor, really. When I first won a load of money as a flashy, cocky, you know, 30-something, you could say I'm a flashy, cocky 51-year-old, I don't care. One of the first things I did was bought an Aston Martin. And yes, it is one of the worst decisions I've ever made. If I look back, would I do it again? Absolutely not. You know, not much I look back on in my life and think, would I not do that? You know, I go, yeah, I would. I enjoyed it at the time, but this I wouldn't do. But it was to be flash, I'm not going to lie. It was basically to say to the people, it was a bit of sort of cock waving to the people when I started doing this, to show that I had made it. I had successful brothers and sisters. One of my brothers not a massive fan of. I'd had a pretty shit life, and I wanted to say to people, look at me, I've done it. So that was really why I did it. It was sort of, you're not laughing at me now type of thing. And that at the time was what I saw as a way of doing it. And of course it's wrong, but that's what I did. But JG, who was my mentor, he absolutely ruined me for it at the time. Ruined me. You know, he was very straight talking, very matter of fact, and he absolutely ruined me. But he did use a great analogy to betting and money management, which has always stuck with me. He said to me when I got the car, he said, it's like, your car's like a betting system with bad money management. You can have the best engine under the bonnet and drive faster than Mr. Volvo, but without good brakes, you're going to do some damage. And that has always stuck with me. You can have the best system, you know, and the flashiest and that, but if you can't manage your money, it's all irrelevant, where the slow and steady Mr. Volvo guy will be the one who comes out on top. And I am now Mr. Volvo, without a doubt. Placing bets, entering trades, exiting trades, all those are only small pieces of this puzzle that we're trying to solve ultimately to make money. How to manage your money and risk will be more important to your future. And I hope through the next few episodes of these pods, blogs, there will be written versions of these, help you with that. We want to ultimately spend less time looking at Excel charts, graphs, building systems. And as I say at the minute, everyone now new who tends to contact me, it's more about building a system. They all have too many systems. You know, the fear of missing out on something, covering all bases, covering all leagues, covering all markets, spreading themselves way too thin, as opposed to, let's just get one thing and stake it properly. And we tend to spend far too much time on that side of it. You know, even when you look at what people post and that, it is graphs, charts, P-tests, T-tests, look at this system, look at that system. We actually don't really talk a lot about risk parameters and money management. And I have people now, we've sort of moved, as I said, to people managing my email, and they will tell you that without doubt my email contains a ratio of probably 99 to 1. Can you look at this system for me? Can you help me to 99 for that? And 1, can you help me with staking a bank? People basically want to be told that they found a winning system. You found a winning system, but they got absolutely no clue what to do with it and how to stake it. Your trading risk over time will be what makes or breaks you. You know, even just looking at the FTS Telegram group, small sample. I had a quick scat through this morning. Common thing, wish I hadn't got involved in that method. I'm 20 points down. It's not the method, it's your risk management. Be honest with yourselves, you saw historical 100 plus points profit, whatever it may be, and you thought, I'll have some of that. That's all it's down to. It's nothing to do with what's gone on. That's what it's down to. Your approach to it, your risk management to it, your staking of it, your involvement in it. And it doesn't matter what you do, whether you bet, trade, scalp, hedge, bet anti-post, you've got to learn to manage your money. You know, it's one of the things I've drilled in my boys since 16, 18. I just don't think in life in general we are taught enough about money and managing money and investing and saving. We're just not. It should be something we're told to do, particularly with the way the world's going and bills and pensions. You know, state pension will be a thing of the past. I have no doubt about it. We need to get hold of people, and I urge all of you, get it into your kids about saving, investing. You know, we don't need 50 million, but we need to be able to live off what we've got for we're all living a bit longer. So all good traders, all good bettors, you know, they know their risk management, they know how to manage their money. And again, on social media, you know, and I'm not digging anybody out. It's really, when you talk about this stuff, you think you're digging them out, and I'm not. It's a lot of it is context. You're not sat in a room, this room with me. You're listening to me over a microphone. But you'll see people who post, you know, huge screenshots, you know, look at me, cock waving, and whipping up their crowd And that's fine. Let them do that. The bit I don't really get is the people who love it that can't win at £10 stakes. You know, a guy risking £10,000 to win 1,500 quid is amazing to them and something they want to worship. But look in your own house, you can't win to tenners. You know, a guy can post 15,000 green screens week in, week out. Doesn't post any red screens, posts all green and fantastic, good on him, marvellous. But it shouldn't be a masturbation fest for you guys because you're not at that level. And it is nothing to do with those guys. It's all about you can't win to tenors. So why are you even worrying about it or getting involved in it? You know, I spoke to a good trader, somebody I know is really good recently. And we were talking about helping people and how to do it. And we were talking about, you know, my belief is that whilst I'm not great from learning video, I've got to make videos. And he said to me, I don't do anything fancy, so you probably don't want me. He said, I'll lose like £25 stakes and win £5-6 a time. He said, but I do it every 5-10 minutes. I thought, well, that's exactly what I want. That is exactly what I want. That's exactly what the community we want to build needs, because it's relatable. It's relatable. You can stake with tenors, 15, 20s and become a regular winner. And once you can do that, then you can build it up and you can grow it. And it's, you know, not somebody posts 200 point graph, look at me, and then somebody else comes along, oh well, look at mine, it's 300 points. We can all show those. Let's do, in my case, let's do pounds, shilling, pence over the last 15 years. That's what it's all about. That is what it's all about. I have paid out personally to people over £1 million cash. Paid them. FTS members listening to this can verify that. I've got people who've bought houses, saved businesses. One bought a boat. £1 million in winnings. Why? Because they could build systems. That's fine. Let me bet it. Take the money management out of it. You've got a good system. Let's take the financial stress off. Let's maximise it and not give you that pressure of that financial side, because they did have great stuff. And I'm betting for people now, they do have great stuff, but they either haven't got the funds, they've got too much going on in life, they're shit scared of losing money. So take that away and all of a sudden you can grow things, and I will make lots more people millionaires over the next 5 years. That is absolute fact. You know, those who go skint do so ultimately because of poor money management, because scratch or taking a red is boring, not what they want, because they want to stake big to get rich quickly. I think it was, and I might be wrong, but I think it was Warren Buffett who said, no one wants to get rich slowly. You know, I don't think of anything in terms really less than 5 years, and I'll guarantee you over 5 years, I'll make more people a hell of a lot of money. So what goes into money management? Lots. How much to risk in general, how much to risk in each trade, when to risk more. You know, that's a topic I'm strong on. You know, look at a good blackjack player, you know, they know when to double down. A good sports trader knows when to bet more. What overall daily exposure do you have? When to hedge, you know, that's a key element. When and how to hedge, how to choose staking sizes on fixed odds, how to grow that bank and compound it, how to pay yourself. All of this, and all this sort of then gets built around your own personal attitude to risk. And I personally would love it if people would pay more attention to that than staring at Excel sheets or wondering why Betfair are charging a premium charge or this, that, and the other. Again, it's focusing, you know, I've got a great saying in life, control the controllables. I can't control what people say about me. I can't control other people losing money if I'm not involved in it. What I can control is what I can do for myself, what I can do for my family, what I can do for my friends, what I can do for the people I like. I can't control what Betfair do. If Betfair goes down, I can't control that. All I can do is have plans in place to operate around that. You know, it's all these things. And I just wish that people would pay more attention to themselves and what they're doing in these areas than worrying what other people are doing all the time. It ultimately will boil down to one thing. Your personal attitude to risk will encompass all those aforementioned things. And it will be consistency. It will be those, not who those who win the most, because we can all have big wins, but it'll be those who lose the least. And I will favour, personally, having done this for a long time, steady and boring over crash, bang, wallop any day. I've had my days of being a gunslinger. I've done it. I didn't particularly enjoy it. I loved the highs, hated the lows. And it led to me actually walking away from trading. I just let fixed odds run because I just didn't want to live that life anymore. And then I came back to it. I've rebuilt everything that I do over the last few years. And now I'm like the Volvo. I chug along 250,000 miles on the clock and still going. So the first phase of this is risk management, attitude to risk, and knowing how much to risk. And I will cover that in the next episode as we delve deeper into this topic. As I said, I don't want to make these long monologues. So on the next episode, we'll take this as a sort of intro into the topic. We'll then move into attitude to risk and knowing how much to risk. And we'll build this topic out from there. And again, I hope that some of you find it useful. As always, thanks for listening.